You're listening to the DC Real Estate Podcast, the podcast where we focus exclusively on all things local to the DMV area. Local investors, local knowledge, local experts. Our journey starts now.
Hey everyone, my name is Russell Brazil. I'm the host of the DC Real Estate Podcast, and I'm an associate broker with Arlo Real Estate.
My name is still Jack Seiden. As the first three episodes, I am a house flipper in DC,
and I'm Ron Gallagher, and I'm a landlord.
Hey, so first thing we're going to do we're going to take a few listener questions that we got, and after that, then we're going to talk about some of Ron's other experiences. So the first question we get is from Nicole, and I think she's an agent with BPG Residential. She asked, what is something you know now about real estate that you wish you had known earlier? Yep, go ahead, Jack.
So I think it's really the importance of, first of all, you get just anytime you do something, you get more knowledge of it. And my knowledge of the process of flipping and all that stuff is infinitely more than it used to be, to the point that it's a well-oiled machine. The other thing is the importance of having a good team. When I started, I had a completely different real estate agent, completely different contractor. Even I think my landscaper has changed over. Like, we've changed over everything. And that allows you to hopefully do a couple things. Get better quality, hopefully better prices. Also, one thing people underestimate, like sometimes when you have a bad agent or a bad contractor, it's not just the money, right? It's a pain in the ass, right? So my life is very easy because I have people who are easy to deal with. I like working with. Every time I see Russell, every time I see my contractor, I'm excited to see them. I'm excited to see me.
And that removes all kinds of stress from your life when you're working with professionals that you actually like.
Yeah. And they happen to be great and they save me money, but frankly, I'd pay a pretty large premium to just like not have to deal with the drama. I'm making enough money at a certain point. When you're making a lot of money, one of the things you want to buy with that is peace of mind. And I'm not worried. I'm not. My last contractor who I fired mid-project, I just remember like every single day I'd have to go over to the house and make sure things were going smoothly, and he'd have five mistakes and I'd have to call him back, and we'd get into, I got into a screaming match with him once. Like, it was bad, and it was like caused me a tremendous amount of stress. And I was, at one point we got in trouble with the city of Tacoma Park because he didn't do the right permits, and it was just a constant, like, I always had to worry, was he going to screw something up and I was going to have to clean it up? And I don't worry about that anymore. And that's just a huge kind of weight off of my shoulders. So I think the importance of having a team of competent people who you like and who are going to make you look good and, you know, not the opposite.
What about you, Ron? Anything you wish you'd known earlier in this business?
I mean, I guess it's that I would have done everything sooner. So, I mean, if you look back, you'd
be retired at 30 if you'd done it.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. But I took a 9-year mini retirement and traveled the world and whatever. So I don't regret doing that. But yeah, you know, I thought about that before. If I would have done, you know, my plan to be financially free a decade earlier, then I would have been retired. Yeah. You know, so, and, you know, people always look back, you know, what's the old real estate joke or whatever? When's the best time to buy? Yesterday, you know? So I think everyone, it would look back and say, you know, maybe during the pandemic, you didn't pull the trigger on an investment property because you were uncertain about the future. So, but now you look back and now it's 20% higher in price, you know, something to buy something like that. So, you know, it's,
the sooner you start, the sooner you can build equity.
Exactly.
The sooner you can build wealth.
And the time value of money is undefeated, right?
Yep.
So I would just say, doing everything sooner.
Our next question is from Nick, and he wants to know if you can do an FHA loan on a triplex that is part of a 1031 exchange. And this is pretty simple, actually. So an FHA loan is going to be for an owner-occupied property. And while you could move out and turn it into a rental down the road, you're typically not mixing a 1031 exchange, which is purely investment, into an owner-occupied property.
And people get this wrong sometimes. You can have one FHA loan at a time. So not only is it has to be owner-occupied, you can get only have one at a time. So,
yeah, I imagine if you would move into a property that you just bought with the 1031 exchange, moving into it would negate the exchange, I would imagine, right. And you create tax liability for yourself.
And also, at the extent that you have enough properties, you're 1031-ing them, you probably have a good amount of equity that you're worried about capital gains. There's kind of no reason to use the FHA loan. I mean, I don't know the specific circumstance, but you would think with someone who has enough equity to bother through 1031, you're better off going conventional.
Now, our last question we'll go over today. We'll try to keep it not too long in this. This is something we could have an entire episode about. But Kyle asked, and I met this Kyle for coffee a few months ago. He wanted to get a detailed play for house hacking. That's something Ron's really good at. And the pros and cons of Baltimore and the pros and cons of DC in doing this. If I'm not mistaken, I think Kyle ended up buying in Howard County, if I'm not mistaken.
So he split the difference.
Yeah, so he went halfway in between. Definitely. So, I mean, I'll start off. One of the best house hacking strategies you can do is if you can buy a multifamily property. If you can't, if you can do the accessory dwelling unit, that's probably the next best thing. And that's essentially what Ron was doing a couple of years ago.
Right. And then Baltimore versus DC. I mean, if you're just talking about appreciation, it's a simple answer.
Yeah. I mean, prices are going to be much more stagnant in Baltimore and they're going to be more steadily rising in DC. And that goes for the rents as well.
Exactly.
Baltimore, you're going to get much more cash flow to start, but you know, that rent's going to basically stay static, you know, year in, year out.
That's an interesting question. What do you think the break even horizon is? It's going to depend greatly. So this is a very broad answer between, like, okay, your initial cash flow in Baltimore is going to be higher, but eventually the DC rent growth catches up with it. Like, what, 5-6 years?
I'd say maybe even half that, three years maybe.
Yeah, people get so obsessed with these cash flow markets. But the truth is, in a very short period of time, you're going to be cash flowing way more money in Montgomery County or DC or anywhere in the DC area than you are in Baltimore, in Cleveland, any of these cash flow markets that don't appreciate on the rent growth.
Yeah, especially if we're talking about DC proper. So, like, rents in Petworth from 2010 to 2020 basically doubled. Renting a row house in 2010 in Petworth was cost you about $2,000 a month. By 2020, that number was at $4,000 a month.
So most of your properties were pretty cash flow neutral when you bought them, but you have, like, what do you? Like,
yeah, so I'd say they were minimally cash flow positive. When you factor in repairs and capital expenditures, they were probably about break even.
And now what do you make?
You know, I've got one property over in Rockville near the high school, and I'm just shy of $2,000 a month cash flow on that.
Yeah, so that's...
And part of that is I did refinance it to get the payment lower, but a lot of that is the rent growth. The rent is like $1,300 higher than when I initially bought it.
And that goes back to the first question, what did you learn? Patience is really important in real estate. Yeah. Patience and discipline. You can get, you know... I've bought houses that I shouldn't have bought, right, on flips that it seemed like there was a lot of profit, or it seemed, right, you discipline and
real estate is a get rich slow scheme, right?
If you try to get rich quick, you'll lose money.
Yeah, if you try to get rich quick, you're going to lose. If you have the patience to stick with it, you're going to make a lot of money, but it takes patience.
Discipline.
So those three, we had tons of actually questions that came in this week. We'll try to get to some of them.
Please
the next
send us
time.
More. We love answering them.
Yeah. And, sorry that we are a week late on this episode. We got back from Bigger Pockets, conference last week and
it took us about a week to recover.
Yeah. It took some time to recover from, New Orleans.
We went and way too long.
Shockingly, none of us got COVID.
I was sickened with not COVID, but with laryngitis. If anyone can hear, I don't know.
Well, from what I remember about Bourbon Street, if you got COVID, it might be one of the better diseases too.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of things you can pick up on Bourbon Street. Exactly. We didn't get any of those either.
Yeah.
But if you remember on the last episode, we were talking to Ron about some of the specifics of his properties, what they were renting for. But really what we want to get into today is some of the adversity Ron has overcome in this business. I feel like every bad thing that can happen has happened to Ron. And, you know, he amazingly has just continued to roll with the punches. If you know, what's the worst thing that can happen to a property is probably it burning down, right? Ron has not had just one fire, but he's had multiple fires, which
kinda
is amazing.
It kind of sounds like you're setting them.
Well, it is a great insurance scam. The first fire was a condo that I was trying to sell during like the 2008 time frame.
I was trying to sell it and it burned down.
And then the insurance money was more than I could have possibly gotten for it at the time.
This is definitely so okay. Now, more you say this, this is definitely an insurance scam.
Blessing in disguise. I was in Argentina at the time, and the condo was in Dallas, Texas. So
did you pay someone to do it?
No, it was actually funny because it was when I got the inspection done on that unit, it was like built in the 60s, and it had some old wiring at the switch, like at the light switches. And
oh, did it have aluminum wiring?
I don't know, but I remember.
Because that is a aluminum wiring is something they were using from about 65 to 75, and it is a fire hazard.
Well, this is probably what it was, because I remember it because the inspector was like, you know, this is a serious problem. And it was serious enough that we were able to go back and get a credit from the seller for like $600 to change the wiring. But of course I never did. I just pocketed the $600, but the fire didn't start in my, but no, hold on. The fire didn't start in my unit.
Yeah.
The fire started in a unit that was being used for storage basically. And
okay. I'm glad you have an alibi. That's good.
But the inspector was right. You know, he's like, one day these little wires are going to get closer and closer, and eventually there's going to be a spark and it's going to cause a fire. So,
okay.
So. And that in fact happened. I'm curious. I wonder if this apartment building, and you probably have no idea because it's so long ago, I wonder if it also had a Federal Pacific electric panel. It's something we would occasionally see. So Federal Pacific panels are fire hazards because they don't trip when the wires heat up. And then aluminum wiring is also a fire hazard because the wires heat up.
They tend to be more West Coast though, right?
No, we've got tons of communities here. Basically, most of the city of Columbia has it. Manor Lake in Rockville has it. Strathmore, Belpre, and Silver Spring has it. So certain builders in this area did use it, and so it is prevalent in certain areas. Bowie, Columbia, Silver Spring, and Herndon, Reston's where I usually see it the most. But when we find aluminum wiring in conjunction with the Federal Pacific panel,
it's like, bad.
It's really, really bad. I just sold this property, but I owned a property that had both of
those. Well, to be clear, it's actually not that bad. You just have to fix it. It's not like you shouldn't buy the house. It's just you should.
But what happens when
you don't pocket the seller credit?
Yeah. That, although it sounds like it worked well for you. You got $600 and an insurance payout.
It sounds like it worked out great for you. So the theme of this adversity podcast should be everything always works out. Yeah. That's always been my philosophy my entire life. And if you believe that, then, you know, things aren't so bad. But yeah, I mean, but at the time, it does not. I'm in Argentina. No. I've got my tenant sending me pictures of flames flying out, you know, because I'm thinking, okay, he's like, there's a fire at another unit.
I think like a small kitchen fire.
Yeah. And, you know, they're going to put that out and there might be some smoke damage and whatever. And then, no, you know, the whole complex is engulfed in flames. So.
I mean, this is actually a really good point because I have seen both of these issues in condo buildings, and you know, I've had clients ask me, "Well, do I get them fixed?" And one of the things I always mention, I'm like, "Well, yeah, you should get it fixed, but
every neighbor also has be to get aware
every single unit here
exactly
has the same problem."
So it wouldn't have done me any good to change the wiring on it. I made the right choice pocketing that $600.
It seems like the condo board should just require that everyone gets them replaced.
I don't know. If you ever deal with condo boards, they can be.
This case, it was a really old man that had built that. He was like oil, you know, back in the 80s in Texas, you know, made some money in oil and then got
cowboy
into
hat.
Real estate. And then it was like an 8-unit building, 12-unit building. And he owned like seven of the, well, it must have been a 12-unit building because he owned like seven of the units. So he was the condo association. Yeah. He was, he was the majority owner. So it, whatever he decided kind of went.
So you're in Argentina. This place burns down. Walk us through like what are the steps like when your tenant calls you and says your house just burned down?
Well, luckily it was really kind of shocking to me because this guy, my tenant, had a kid I flew back from Argentina like a couple months later and I flew into Dallas. I think I had a layover in Dallas. So I was like, let me rent a car and just go out and see the damage. So there was a fence put up and I snuck in through the fence and went inside my unit, which the doors were just wide open or whatever. And there's pictures of his kids and his family and whatever. Like he just abandoned everything. It looked like, you know, he didn't take any keepsakes or whatever. Just like, all right, well, that was a fire. All my belongings are gone. I don't need any. I'll just start totally fresh.
Did he have renter's insurance?
I don't know. No. I don't know. But he did kind of like a clean break. He never really, you know, said like, I need to be compensated for this. You know what I mean? Like, it's not my fault, obviously, but I think as a tenant, there's a, you know, this.
You think there'd be a natural sort of like friction that would take place there.
But luckily he's was super laid back and he just kind of was like, all right, I guess I've got to go find another place to live or whatever. And he did that and never heard from him again. Mm-hmm. And like I said, all of his belongings and everything were still there. So it didn't seem like he was a person that was, had the personality or the mentality that, you know, this fire was going to destroy his life or whatever.
And obviously you had that same mentality too, because you took it in stride.
Well, I mean, it was, like I said,
imagine it must have been stressful.
At the time, it was very stressful because I'm in Argentina. There's not a whole lot I can do. I'm getting just kind of like that old man that owns the condo complex. He's not on email. He's not, you know, what am I going to do? Send a letter from airmail from Argentina?
Pigeon carrier.
Right. So, I mean, luckily I had a friend there in Dallas that would go over and kind of check it out for me. And he would run into the daughter of the owner of the building and they would chat and she would feed information back to me. So I got some information, but at the time it was really, really stressful and negative. And insurance companies work at like a snail's pace, I'm learning. So, because I just had the second fire and we still haven't like communicate. I don't know what the standard is for insurance companies, like responsiveness and customer service, but it's been very minimal, you know, like contact.
So what was the timeline on this first fire?
It was probably months before, probably 3 to 6 months before I got a check. And, you know, I didn't know if that check was coming. I don't know how this stuff all works. And I did not have insurance on my condo because I owned it free and clear. I paid for it in cash with putting a second mortgage on one of my properties in D.C. Hmm. So then I, you know, properties were super cheap in Texas. So, you know, I could just do a cash out refinance on one of my D.C. properties and then buy a condo in Dallas, Texas for, you know, with cash. So. But luckily, there was a master insurance policy on the condo building, and that was enough to. So,
how much did that master insurance policy compensate you?
I think I paid like, if I remember correctly, I paid like somewhere like $70,000 for the condo, and I think I got a check for like $90,000.
I have a great story of a friend of a friend who. bought some place in Cumberland, Maryland for like $20,000, $30,000. And they got the insurance. And I guess at the time it had a small foundation crack. The insurance didn't catch when they issued the policy. Within 6 months, it was so bad. The house was totaled. They wrote him a check for $80,000. He'd bought this house for like 20 or 30. And yeah, like more than doubled his money.
Yeah, I think it was just based on like, you know, I had owned it for a couple of years. And it wasn't that they weren't looking at like what the market is doing right now. Cause this is like I said, it was this 2008 timeframe when I was trying to sell it and I couldn't sell it. And they were looking at, you know, cost to rebuild or whatever, you know, materials and stuff to rebuild it.
I can tell you, that's amazing that in a falling real estate market, your place burned down and you made more money than what you paid for.
But I mean, that's what I'm saying. Everything always works out. Russell, look, when we were trying to sell my condo earlier this year, and the condo market, you guys talking about it on this podcast, talking about how the condo market is, you know, kind of dead in DC right now. And it makes sense, you know, high density housing isn't really popular during a global pandemic. But what happened for us? You sold my condo for $15,000 more than we were asking for in a not a great hot condo market. So everything always works out.
Yeah, it's amazing that... That worked out, and really your trust in me was great there, because I've had plenty of clients, not plenty, but I've had some clients that have not trusted me in what I told them to do. And it, you know, worked out not that great for them because they didn't want to listen. You were very receptive to me telling you like, no, let's not drop the price here. Let's just wait. Let's be patient. And then we came up with that, great idea that so.
I don't even know if you want to share this idea because this is too brilliant.
Oh, no one's going to do it anyways.
Okay,
but
people condo people don't have the trust that I think you have, the attitude of the good attitude.
I think we had the condo listed for about $399 at the time, and it had a separately deeded parking space that we're including in the sale. Well, I came up with the idea to sort of refresh the listing that we were going to separate the we're going to try to sell them separately. Here's the condo. Here's the parking space.
Because we previously couldn't sell it at the combined 400,000, right, which is my that was my target sale price. That's what it was worth in my head. And it was a dead market, dead condo market during the pandemic. And it was the beginning of the year. And it was the height of one of the pandemic surges. It was January, February timeframe of 2021.
It was really bad then.
So we were looking at a creative way to sell it. And then Russell had his great idea to
So we listed the condo for $385,000 and the spot for $30,000.
And then what happens in less than a month, we get two full cash offers and on both.
We're able to sell
negotiation.
Able to sell it for $415,000 total when we could not sell it for $400,000 previously. Together.
Right. Brilliant. So I wind up with $15,000 more than I – Russell gets me $15,000 more than I thought I was going to be happy with $400,000 in a dead condo market, in a market that we couldn't sell them together. But then just the, – it seems so simple now, but, you know, it's brilliant.
Yeah. I mean, that worked out incredibly well for us. So let's talk about some of the other really negative experiences. So we
sounds had. Like you have like the plague basically in your life.
Yeah.
Fires, and we're just talking real estate. Fires, Ron's had some other bullshit that's not real estate.
I mean, nonstop.
Too.
This is a therapy session. Yeah. Tell us all of your problems in life.
So during the last,
we think it's a real estate podcast. This is really a group therapy. So
during the last 12 months during the pandemic, my car was broken into 3 times. And you could say, you could say, oh, it's DC, or oh, it's living in the city or whatever. Or, oh, I go out, so my car is parked in, you know, sketchy neighborhoods at night or whatever. But 2 times it happened when it was just outside my house. 1 time it happened at a I'll tell the story in chronological order. So 1 time I go out around Thanksgiving during the pandemic and I'm trying to find my car and I know where I parked my car, but it's not there. And I'm walking around the neighborhood because, you know, if you ever parked in the city, if you park on one street one night and whatever, and it just becomes kind of a ritual. And then you kind of forget what, like,
where to park your
right. So I'm walking around all the usual spots that I park my car and I couldn't find it. And then eventually I call the police and I'm like, hey, you know, is there, you know, like.
It would have been really embarrassing if they've been like, actually just like lost it. It's the block over.
But I looked all over. I looked all over twice. And then because like day one, I was like, all right, I can't find it. It was starting to get dark. And I'm like, well, I'll just deal with this tomorrow. It's the pandemic. I can't go anywhere anyway. It was during lockdown, whatever. So then I called, then the next day after combing the, you know, the blocks again, I was like, all right, let me call the police because obviously I was parked in a, I don't know. Something happened. So then there, so I give my license plate number to the dispatcher on like 311 or whatever. And she's like, oh, your car was in an accident. And I'm like, an accident? What are you talking about? And she's like, go to any police station and give them this case number and then they can print you out a report or whatever. So I'm trying to gather what's going on. Long story short, my car, some Penske rental truck was turning into an apartment complex and my car was parked just before the entry driveway to that apartment complex. And he clipped the front of my car, but he clipped it with such force that it put the ass into my car out into this one lane road that I was parked on.
Yeah.
I was blocking traffic. They called the police and then they had the car towed.
The police never contacted you to say, just so you know, we towed your car.
So fast forward like 3 weeks later, I'm at my rental property that I used to live at and there's a letter and then hi, your car is at this impound lot.
Oh, yeah.
So I find out that my car is at this impound lot. So I go to the impound. So now already, what's the chances that your car is going to be involved in a no car accident? You know what I mean? Yeah. Like it's just sitting there innocently parked during lockdown on a, you know, on a street like it has a billion times before. And then so that's like what? One in a million. So now let's add another statistic to it. So while I'm at, I go to the impound lot and the car just looks like, the car just looks horrible. And I,
well, your car doesn't look that great to begin with.
It does not look that great.
I was having a bad hair day. I didn't have makeup.
But think about what my poor car has been through, Russell. I mean, this poor car, my grandmother would have never given it to me if she knew, would have known what was going to happen to this. So,
The car is resilient as you are. It's like a good story. The car was as resilient as you are.
The car is resilient. I mean, I drove it up here. I mean, because they were talking about, well, we're just going to have to total it out. And I'm like, I don't want to buy a new car. Like,
yeah, there's always
I didn't do anything. I just parked my car on the street.
And there's always like at a certain point if you're into cars, you have some sentimental attachment, right? You're like, I don't.
It's my grandmother's car. Yeah, my grandmother gave me that car.
Like, I don't want to total it out. Just fix it.
Right. So,
is this when the guy broke into it?
Yeah. So then I go.
It's really a community car for the city of DC.
It really is.
It's not really Ron's car.
So then I went to the impound lot for the first time at late in the afternoon, and I'm like, just to check it out. And I was still gathering information at the time, trying to figure out what was going on. And just see if my car was actually there. You know, I haven't seen my car for 2 weeks. And then I just was like, well, I really don't know what to do. So I'm just going to go home, regroup, figure out, like, call auto body shops, I guess, or whatever. So I was like, I'll come back here tomorrow. So I come back to the impound lot the next day, and the impound lot guy greets me, and he's like, I've got bad news. And he's like showing me on his phone this camera footage. He's got barbed wire fencing all around his impound lot. Somehow these guys get into the impound lot. He's showing me the camera footage of them breaking into the impound lot. Since my car was towed into the impound lot, it was locked.
It's got to be the worst car there.
So it was the only locked car in the impound lot. So they thought maybe it was something of value inside or whatever. So they take like a brick, throw it in, they break into my car. So now we're talking about, one in a million event inside nest. It's like Russian nesting dolls. One in a million event inside a one in a million event. So, it's crazy. Very unlikely. And then the third time that my car was broken into was when I was out in DC one night. And then, Russell, I told you about this, but I was out in DC one night. And then I was coming back up to where my car was parked.
This is when the drug addict broke into it.
Right. And then I could see that the sun wasn't reflecting off the passenger side when I was walking up to the car. So I was like, oh, geez, someone broke into the car again. They smashed the window. So this would be the third time in 12 months that this has happened to my car. But again, the one time was in an impound lot with razor wire around, chain link fence. And then this time, as I'm approaching my car, I'm looking into the passenger seat with all the broken glass and everything. And there's a guy sleeping in the driver's side. So there's a guy, the guy breaks into my car, but that was such a taxing event that he had to take a nap.
Yeah.
And slept in my
car. How do you presume to know how taxing it is to break into cars?
Yeah, I don't know. But
then the police come, they get rid of that guy. He's trying to. The police are giving you a hard time.
Police were the worst. I would like to, if I knew their four names, I would call them out on this podcast. When we go to court, my focus will not be on the criminal. It'll be on the four police officers who were horrible bedside manner. Were making me to be the victim. And
they were victim shaming.
They were victim shaming me. They were making me out to be the bad guy.
What did they think you should have done differently?
Well, I called the guy an inconsiderate asshole, and one of the officers was like, sir, we don't need to talk to him like that. And I'm like, he's getting off easy.
I think you do.
I think most people would take that brick that he used to break into my car and smash his head in with it. I could have done that before the police came.
That's how you told the police officer?
That's right. How I could have woke him up. No, I was like, sure, take the criminal side. And he's like, just because he committed a crime doesn't... Oh, we have laugh tracks. He's like, so the officer goes, just because he committed a crime doesn't make him up. And I'm like, that's the definition of criminal. And so they were like, these are fun. What else do you have?
I've been wanting to use these for a little while.
Well, So anyway, I don't want to belabor these stories.
He's going to be in prison thinking like, you know, it was not even the time. That guy, he just he may have impacted his life. Like maybe it's inconsiderateness that he's going to consider next time. May have been a good life lesson for him.
He was the only one on my side. So
anyways, let's circle back to the real estate after the
– No, this is so much better.
Well, I mean, it shows you what an interesting life Ron leads and how he just gets by all this bullshit. But let's bring it back to
this is I'm not even halfway done with this. This is like Ron's just getting started.
We've talked about the one fire Ron had. Now let's bring it back to the house in College Park, which I think we went over the numbers on this house
last time.
Yeah, last time. So it was a house we bought under interesting circumstances. It's about $500,000 and we get about $5,000 in rent on it. Just an awesome, awesome house that has helped Ron achieve financial freedom. However, he's had multiple issues with the house as well.
I've had a psycho tenant who would tape the electrical sockets with like black electrical tape and thought that, I don't know, you know, whatever, you know, tinfoil hat, whatever people think, you know, when they have some sort of mental disorder. And, you know, so he got off his meds. I don't know what happened. He, at some point, cut the internet line.
Is this the guy who was sending the pictures of pizza to people?
No, that's a totally different psycho tenant. So that's what I'm saying. I have many, many psycho tenants. And so anyway, he eventually, you know, moved out. But it wasn't without a lot of, you know, drama where, I mean, Russell, you were involved in the first time because this guy got arrested.
Oh, this was the guy.
Right. So yeah. I didn't know whether or not he was like he could never figure out Cozy. Cozy was how I collected rent, now a part of CoStar Apartments.com conglomerate. But back when Cozy was just like one guy that making a website that was like Venmo for landlords, then that's when I used it. And he could never get his, or he didn't have a bank account or whatever. So he could never get that to work. So he'd always Venmo me his rent every month. And then one month he just never Venmoed me the money. And when I was texting him, he never responded. So I'm like, all right, let me do like a little wellness check here. So I tell him, you know, tomorrow in 20, you know, I give him 24-hour notice, but tomorrow I'm going to key into your apartment. And I'm going to, you know, see if, you know, what's going on here. See how, what's happening. And then, all of his stuff was still there and everything inside the apartment. So Russell, you had the idea to check the Maryland criminal case.
Yeah. See if database. He had been arrested. And
right.
And he came up, right?
And he was, yeah. Right. He had been arrested. And then, so I had to search him down. This is a long, long story, but you know, it's just another drama. I mean, it's just so much drama, you know, dealing with these tenants. And, you know, it goes, so he was upfront about his criminal past and, you know, it was like in his early 20s or whatever. And I'm a forgiving person. And part of me was like, this is a cautionary tale, I guess, real estate podcast wise. It was the middle of winter and I was still working at the time. You know, I didn't live in this neighborhood. So it was like a 20-30 minute drive after work to go show this apartment. So I'm just like, sure, I'll just give it to the criminal. You know, I'll let the criminal rent it out.
I love how going from Columbia Heights to College Park.
Well, I remember I called myself a long distance landlord once and you laughed at that. But I mean, it's a pain in the butt. There are no highways between Washington, D.C., Columbia Heights, inside the inner city of Washington, D.C., and College Park. You have to go through all these little side streets and maybe East-West Highway. And, you know, it's just, it's not a convenient drive. It's a pain in the butt to get up there. So, you know, he seemed like a nice enough guy. I'm like, all right, you know, let me rent it out to him. But I think that most criminals have a mental disorder. The guy that broke into my car and slept in it probably has a mental disorder.
That's probably true.
So, so I guess the cautionary tale is I'm never renting to a criminal again, you know, and how can you tell?
Well, depending on what the crime is, right? Cause, I have a feeling really you would, marijuana related offense.
Yeah, probably. I probably.
Because that's, honestly, we went to someone who had just like possession of marijuana.
I mean, I have to, I even like when I do screenings now and they have a traffic ticket, I'm like, I don't know.
Well, you definitely would not be renting to me with my history of speeding tickets.
I have been pulled over 7 times, never gotten a ticket.
Nice.
So I don't know. I mean, if you have 2 applications and you have 2 people that are equal, they have a 700 credit score and they're just out of college and they're the same age and everything is equal, and one has a traffic ticket. You know, there was a time when I had 2 girls applying for the same room and they were equal in every way. Like they were.
Well, you got to have a deciding factor.
So the deciding factor might be
a speeding ticket, and I'd want to know.
But I would imagine if you had a tenant with a marijuana related offense, I would imagine you'd want to hang out with them.
Yeah, I think you'd be like, yes, please move in and smoke with me.
No, but I don't want, I mean, like, just like I don't want my tenants.
You don't want them bothering the other tenants.
I don't want my tenants smoking. Fires happen. You know, like I told my tenants, like I was like delayed on billing back the utilities when the month that the fire happened at College Park, at my College Park property. You know, and it's just like, you know, sorry that I was, you know, a little late billing back the utilities. I, you know, had this fire that I'm dealing with. And I was like, and if you ever wondered why I say no, because some people complain like no candles. I even put it in my, not only is it in the lease, but it's in my ad to rent the rooms. And people are like, I think I know the answer, but why don't you allow candles?
Well, I think I know the answer.
Oh, there's right. Multiple fires. At
right.
Properties.
Right. Fires do happen. I mean, I went to one of my rentals one day and I was like, it was a tenant that was moving out. And I was like, if you don't mind, I'm going to come over and take pictures of your room so I can, you know, and take a little video tour so I can, you know, get it rented out. So he knows I'm coming. And I go over there and he's gone. He's like, oh, yeah, no problem. I'll be at work at that time anyway. So he's gone. And in his room is a lit candle, like an unattended lit candle. So, you know, fires happen. There are other ways to freshen the air than incense and candles. So, and you can go smoke marijuana and tobacco and whatever out on the front porch. But that's why I put in my lease, no candles.
Smoking,
no flames inside my buildings.
So anyways, let's go back to the College Park house. So obviously, as landlords, we all have tenant problems from time to time.
Yours are a lot worse.
Yeah, but what we don't have is 6 feet of water floods in our properties.
Right. So I forgot about, because the fire is the most recent natural disaster that's happened there. I totally forgot about the flood. So
did you like piss off like some like God or something like is there something, it's like you're cursed.
Well, if you'll indulge me for 2 minutes, I can explain how your life has gone
this way.
No, I can explain how, because most people would say, you know, peace out, I'm done with this. Yeah. Not only peace out, I'm done with real estate, but peace out, you know, I'm done with life.
Because
<You
know? laughs> most of the shit that is happening to you would drive most people out of the landlording business.
I think it would drive. Right? I think I agree with Ron. It would drive me out of life.
Right.
I feel like I'm cursed.
Drive you to suicide. Right. But, or at least a severe case of paranoia.
Or depression.
Yeah. Because why is all this stuff happening to me?
Just like in the mental institution, just like, you know, shaking, just like. Fires, floods, just like what happened. I did house hacking was a mistake, as you're like being like taken away by people and like,
but let's go back to the flood, because
okay, yeah, so
I remember when you sent me the video of this, I was like, oh my God,
the flood was the first time maybe in my life, but certainly in my real estate career, where I didn't know what to do. I mean, so tenants tend to over exaggerate everything.
Yes.
I just got a text before I came up here from a tenant. I hate to be the bearer of bad news. And I'm like, you know, and you can only see the first couple of lines of the text message or the first couple of words.
The shower has a small leak in it.
Because based on my thing, I hate to be the bearer of bad news, is that the rest of the text message is going to be that entire house is burned down. That there's a flood in the basement. It was six feet of water, 8 feet of water. You know, so I'm just like, okay, this is going to be crazy. And I open up the entire text message. She's like, the back door doorknob is loose and I can't take the trash out. So,
like, thank God.
No big deal.
But just like, and they're like, just this past weekend, I was at one of the rentals and the tenant has a portable AC unit in their room. And she's like, can you come, when you come over to the place, can you come and check my portable AC unit? I left for a couple hours and I came back and my entire room was flooded. And so I go over and the problem was she had never cleaned the filter ever in the back. So the back where the intake is for the air for the mm-hmm. air conditioner is just covered with like a half an inch of dust.
Yeah.
And so there's no airflow and
the
system is just freezing up. Yeah. Right. And the leaking is not really leaking. It's the ice melting. It's the condensation melting. So anyway, I was like, you know, just clean this filter and, you know, it'll be fine. But if I could give one piece of advice to my tenants, if you're talking, especially if you're dealing with me and a lot of them don't know that I've had all these extraordinary circumstances and things happen to me, but don't preface your text message with, oh my God, you know, whatever. Just like, oh, I remember at this College Park property, yeah. one of the tenants was like, initiate flood controls. Like, this is seriously what this text message said. There's a leak, blah, blah, blah. Come here immediately, whatever. So I'm like, oh my God. So I'm driving up and I'm thinking there's going to be like 8 feet of water or whatever. And I go up there and the toilet up above needed like a new wax seal. And there's like a tiny little water stain on the ceiling. And I'm like, this was initiate flood protocols or whatever.
You have a flood protocol?
What is no, that? I don't know what he was talking about. I don't know what he was talking about.
But you need a flood protocol.
But he was ahead of his time because he was just, that was just a practice run for when one of the tenants, texted me the day of the 8 foot flood and he was like, there's some water, you know, the basement's flooded. And I'm like, okay, that's going to be just like initiate flood protocol. Yeah. Like there's going to be a little bit of water in the basement. You know,
get it dried up.
Yeah.
But you get there and it is not.
I get there and the stairwell down to the basement is up to like 7/8 of the way up the door. So it's, if your average door is what, 7 feet or whatever, then a little less than 7 feet, then the water was at least 6 feet high and the entire basement was flooded. So it's like having a swimming pool, which the basement is the entire footprint of the house. So it's like having a swimming pool that's 6 feet deep. You know, that's the amount of water that I had.
It's biblical. Floods, mm-hmm. fires.
Mm-hmm.
And you get there and you have, because I perfectly understand this. I remember you telling me, like, you just had no clue.
I had no idea what to do. I text my handyman on WhatsApp a little video, a picture of, you know, the 8 feet of water, 6 feet of water, whatever. And I just, and I told him, I was like, I don't know what to do. Like, I really, and then I had to, like, then my landscape.
And you don't know if you want to touch it because, like, there's an, you know, there's electricity down there. Absolutely. Are you going to get zapped if you touch this water?
Absolutely. Because then the guy who sold me the property who lives next door, he comes over, Alan comes over, and he's got a bucket and I'm like, and some rain boots. And I'm like, Alan, I don't think we should touch it, you know? And I was like, with a bucket, we're going to be here. I mean, I was like, he was under the assumption that the water was just at the door in the stairwell. He didn't think that the water was all the way behind the door in the basement, but I'm like, no, that water is all the way back there in the basement. Yeah. Well, so like I said, everything always works out. So during this, my landscaper calls, and my landscaper is,
he's been eaten by some sort of animal at this point, is what I'm
saying. No,
he's
no,
like
no.
Some cheetah.
No, see my landscaper. No, see my landscaper had the solution. So my landscaper loves to talk. He could never. It was such a simple thing. It was like what we were talking about before with some. We can't name names, but before the podcast when we were talking, and we were talking about how people made such a big production of everything. So it's like all I'm asking you to do is go to the property and remove some weeds off the front lawn. We don't need to meet. We don't need to, you know, you drive by, you tell me how much it's going to cost. We don't need to meet and talk about, give me an estimate and then whatever. Just go remove the weeds and I'll pay you a fair price, you know. So, but this guy liked to call
That's
me.
That's how we like to do real estate transactions, by the way. When me and Russell buy a house, we just sell us the house. We'll give you a fair price. It's fine. We'll compensate.
What are you going to charge? What are you going to, you know, like, you're not going to charge me $1,000 because that's retarded, but I don't think I can say that word. That's dumb. You're not going to
mentally challenge.
You're not going to charge me $100 because that's unfair to you. So I know what just go do it and then just charge me a fair price and it'll be fine. But anyway, he liked to make a big production out of everything. So he's calling me. I don't remember what, you know, to talk. Let's talk ad nauseum about some landscaping removal of weeds for a half hour. So I'm like, dude, I can't talk to you right now. My basement at one of my rental properties is a swimming pool. And I was like, but hey, do you know like a plumber or someone that could come and pump this water out? And he's like, yeah, hold on. I'll call you back in 5 minutes. So my landscaper, sure enough, ten minutes later, this guy named Angel calls.
But this really, and are Angel, you sure this isn't some like test of your faith or something? This
do
is
you
like,
want me to get into is, it? If you'll indulge me for 2 minutes, I'll explain it all.
We'll do that at the end. Because we might want to edit that out.
I can tell you the secret of life. I told you in the first podcast I was on, I told you how to become financially free. I can tell you the meaning of life and the secret to happiness.
You should have what do you call it? Where they charge you like a seminar about the meaning of life. Forget about real estate. You can charge people.
I can do that, but I always think that's kind of like
snack. So Angel gives you a call.
Angel gives me a call, and I was like, you are so appropriately named. So he comes over, and again, he's a plumber with experience, whatever, and he comes over with his water. I'm explaining what the situation is. He comes over with his water pump, but then he just is like, oh, like, this is a swimming pool, you know, I don't know, 40,000 metric.
6 feet of water. How long's the house? Maybe 40 by 30 or something?
I'm not good at estimating distance.
Long.
Yeah, 40 feet long by maybe 30, 35 feet. But an
average house,
feet,
imagine the footprint of an average house, an average basement, the floor plan of an average basement, and then put 6 feet of water on top of that. And
Was there a diving board involved?
No. No diving board. No. And so Angel goes up and he, like I said, I've never, you know, experienced something like this. He never experienced something like this. He's like, oh, I got to go back and get a bigger pump. He's like, I'm not going to be able to pump out this kind of water. And meanwhile, the sump pump is work. You know, the sump pump is still trying to work, but the sump pump can't.
It's just overwhelmed. But
every once in a while, a little bit of water is spitting out from the pipe or whatever. So Angel goes to Home Depot. Excuse me. I hate Home Depot right now. Angel goes to Lowe's and he gets a bigger water pump, but he's like, this was like a 100-year flood or whatever, right? So other people around this area that live by that Lowe's are all doing the same thing. So he's like, I got the last complicated water pump. He's like, all the easy ones that you didn't have to attach your own pipes to or whatever, but I know how to do that. So he got the last more complicated water pump. So we're pumping out the water and the water level's not going down, but I can tell it's working, but he's like, I'm going to be here all night. And I'm like, well, I'm kind of exhausted. So
peace out.
I'm going to leave. You know, I was there for 3 hours. You know what I mean? But he's like,
3 hours.
He's like, is there, you know, I was like, I'll send you a pizza or something. Get you Uber Eats. He's like, no, I'm fine or whatever. So he just stayed there. I don't know. He said the next day, you know, he's like the next day he said it was drained out.
Yeah. So basically it took a whole day to drain the space.
Took a whole night.
And, HVACs are ruined, right? Water heaters ruined. Somehow
the whole basement's probably totally.
Somehow the water went right up to where the electric panel
breaker
was.
Breaker boxes.
But didn't get into the breakers, right?
It was it reached the breaker box where you'd put the fuses in. Yeah. I don't know what they're called. But those bottom slots were empty.
Yeah.
But if it would have gone any further, but it did reach the modem that was, you know, on the like
the cable modem.
Right. Yep. So the internet was gone. It fried the modem. It fried the router. All of the Verizon Fios circuitry was gone. It even broke the lock. The lock being submerged underwater. Angel had to kick the door in we had to break into the basement so I had to change the lock on the basement.
Everything was like a minor. Ruined.
And ultimately insurance did not pay for this because you didn't have flood insurance, correct?
That's right. So how do I make this? How do I turn, you know, I could turn the Dallas fire into something good because I got more money for it than I could have selling it and I couldn't sell it anyway. So how does this turn into an everything always works out? Well, if you remember, Russell, that those mechanicals in that basement, they were like 2000, 2001.
They were getting close to where they were.
Yeah, so they were at their end of their life anyway, 20 years old, end of life. This happened in October timeframe. I'm doing my 2020 taxes right now, so I know that. So now I'm reliving this. It's like, okay, when was this capital expenditure. Oh, it was my receipts say it was October or whatever. So it was around this time frame, which is fall, which they could be without, you know, heat or AC. You know, it was a nice time versus let's say the furnace went out on Christmas Eve.
Yep.
You know, me trying to get someone out there. Now I have the mechanicals have been. Now it's all brand new. They got a brand new hot water heater. They even got a little upgrade because it's like an 85 gallon instead of a 50 gallon or something. Because whatever, only the best for my tenants, right?
But you got it. You got it all fixed.
Got it all fixed. It was $14,000 in total out of pocket, but it was something that was going to have to be done eventually anyway. So now it was done in the fall, when it was the least inconvenient to my tenants. So, it was kind of, in this case, it wasn't like a blessing in disguise, but it was, you know, like it could have turned out.
Could have been worse. Could have been right. The height of summer when it was 100 degrees or the dead of winter when it was, you know, 20 degrees.
Or Christmas time when you'd have to pay double to get, you know, someone out
and
there.
And ironically, the supply chain has had such problems that you probably got a much better deal than you would have if you'd done it.
If you did it today, there might have been a $20,000 problem.
That's why I go back to what I said when we were answering the questions. Always do things as soon as you can.
So the same property also
we're not done yet. We're not done yet.
Yeah, oh, we're not done. So the same property had a garage on it.
Oh, right, the fire.
And
luckily, the garage is detached. So again,
detached garage, you were renting it out. How much were you getting in rent on the garage?
So when I bought the property, I inherited a garage tenant who used it as like a little workshop. And I was getting $60.
Oh, not very much. Okay. So that didn't impact your cash flow?
No, not at all. Not at all.
But I remember this month, 6 weeks ago, pretty recent, right?
Yeah, really recent. Probably like 2 months ago.
Like, I remember you text me and you're like, oh, by the way,
I don't know if I told you, right?
Did I tell you? My garage burned down.
I like how such bad stuff has happened to you.
I had another fire.
It's like, oh, by the way.
Right.
It's like, right. This has gotten so bad that it's just like a, you know, I had eggs for breakfast and my garage burned down.
Right.
So,
I mean, that's the thing. I most people would, like we said, would just give up. We'd say, I'm no longer going to be a landlord. You know, this would be the straw that brought the camels back. That happened on a Friday afternoon. The police department called me, or the fire department calls me, and they're like, there's a fire in your property. And I'm like,
I know. I'm used to this.
I'm like, okay. What do I need to do? Like, and then he's like, well, I don't know. Maybe, you know, Monday call the city and just make sure that they're not going to fine you because you have an unsafe structure. And I guess call your insurance. And then so that was a Friday. And I knew the insurance company, based on their lack of responsiveness during the flood, that no one was going to be answering the phone or taking down claims or whatever on the weekend. So I was like, I didn't even go up there until Monday to check the property, to check the fire. I was just like, well, another fire. Nothing I can do about this now. So I'm just going to go continue about my weekend the way I had planned. So I didn't even go up there till the Monday after. I didn't call insurance till the Monday after. So,
I mean, that's a pretty good way to take it in stride, because I know I would be stressed out. I'd want to go see it immediately. And you're like,
whatever.
I've had properties
dealt with this before. You know, the fire, it can wait till Monday.
This whole lesson might be a lesson of the benefits of smoking weed. You're pretty chill about all of this stuff. Is it just the weed?
I knew Ron before he started smoking weed, and he was still pretty chill.
Right. But lately, for whatever reason, the last like 2 years, during the pandemic, maybe things have really escalated. Like it was where it's like, okay, all of this stuff, you know, my car gets broken into 3 times. I have a flood. I have 5 psycho tenants I have to deal with.
It's like snowballing
tenants. I've got the pandemic. I've got this, my car gets, you know, rammed, you know, by the Penske truck. My car gets the guy sleeping in it. All these extraordinary events are happening. So I always say,
and it sounds like we've made this up for podcast content.
Right. So
that sounds insane.
I mean, we could save it till the end, but I can tell you how I get through this mentally. But
let's get life advice from Ron.
Yeah. But we'll save it for the end. But so then Russell can edit it out. But
yeah. So So what's the deal with the garage now? It's burned down. You're going to.
So how can I turn this? How can I call it bright siding things, looking at things on the bright side. So how can I bright side this fire or whatever? Well, I was only making $60 from that tenant anyway. So I'm not going to rebuild the garage. I could. So one thing I could do is I could rebuild the garage. They make these prefab steel garages, $10,000. They'll deliver it on a truck and they'll put it on the slab.
But you don't want normal. You don't
that's
want
boring. That's
normal. That Ron, we know Ron. He would not do that.
So how can I make this, turn this into a benefit to me and my friends and family? Let me rebuild the garage, but let me rebuild a super disco man cave garage.
Oh, that's awesome.
Party garage. So the insurance company is going to pay to rebuild the first level. It's a one level, kind of like two car long garage, tandem parking garage. So the insurance company is going to pay to rebuild the first level and put a roof on it, right? So why don't I pay to put a second level on?
Yeah, marginal cost.
I've already got it all. I already met with my contractor. We designed it all out. The first floor is going to be the garage where you could park a car, but when a car's not there,
it's going to be the dance floor.
Put a little apartment above it.
And the apartment above it will have, a bar, and it'll have four TV screens that you could either watch, like, you know, the combined show on, you know, super huge four TVs. Or if you're watching, you know, if it's, you know, NFL playoff season, you can go watch all four games. You can watch four
this
games awesome. At once yes. or whatever.
This is a benefit to me personally. Yeah.
So that's how I envision that. And then the bottom, the garage level will have a projector, a DJ booth, a stage, it'll be like the dance floor, and the upstairs will be more like the bar.
It's
going to
be like your weekend getaway.
It's going to be my little, you know, what's that little Pierre de You know, it's where people commute into the city. Like you know, you just have your tiny little apartment in Paris because, you know, you don't want to commute every.
I think this is the first time someone's compared College Park to Paris.
It's the Paris.
It's the Paris of Prince George's County.
It's the Paris
of Prince George's County. I'm not even sure that's true.
So, it's the Paris of Prince George's County for sure.
I'm not even sure I agree with that.
So, you know, so mine's the opposite. When I'm tired of D.C. and there's some protest or march or something in the city, shutting down the city or whatever, I'll just go up there and escape. When you, Russell, tell me, you know, it's a Friday night, I just want to, you know, do something different or whatever, I give you the code, the smart key. There's a smart key lock on it. I give you the code. You go up, you hang out. Same thing for any of my other friends. If I have family visiting, you know, people are visiting DC all the time. So if I have people visiting, I'm going to sneak a little bed in there, you know, whatever. And then people will be able to, you know, crash there. I have a friend that's visiting, that's, you know, trying to get his start working in DC. You know, that could be a place for him to until you get on your feet or whatever. So it has multiple uses.
We got to start like some sort of Yelp page for like Club Ron. We can leave reviews.
Yeah. So right now, Prince George's County doesn't allow for ADUs. I remember calling the city because I want to know what my limits are. So I call College Park and I'm like, I want to have a super garage with, you know, a second level.
Is that what you called it? She's super
like,
garage.
Yeah. She's like, hold on a second, honey. You're not going to have a super garage or whatever. And then she referred me to Prince George's County. She says, we just kind of follow their laws. So I wanted to know how tall can it be? I know I can't have a stove, but can I have a refrigerator? Probably. You know, can I have a sink? Probably. You know, if I can have a sink, then I can have a toilet, right? Can I have a shower? You know, because if I can't have a shower, then I won't hang out up there.
Yeah.
But if I can have a shower, then I will hang out up there. If they tell me I can't have a shower, then I told the contractor, we'll figure out a workaround. Like, okay, we'll look into a camp shower or something else. But, you know, once we get a cold water lead in there, we can always do on-demand hot water heaters under the sink and at the shower, you know, 4 gallons or whatever.
But it's an incredible way to take this.
Negative.
What's a terrible negative event, turn it into positive, as you've done time and time and time again.
So always think about, don't think of, take a day to grieve. You know, and whatever, and pity yourself and go eat some ice cream or whatever to make yourself feel better. But then you got to pick yourself up, you know, like I say, doing things sooner, like we've been talking about this podcast, doing things sooner is better. So get this all done, you know, as fast as you can, you pick yourself up and just move forward. Like, how are you going to get through this? You're going to call the insurance company. You're going to get a contractor, you know, and now it's turned into a fun project. You know, a fire, something that could be mentally devastating to most people and their real estate career. I'm talking to my contractor and the electrician and stuff, and they're like, oh yeah, we could put arcade games in here and whatever. And I'm like, yes, exactly. This is what I want you to think about. You know, it's like, be thinking of the craziest thing you can think of. The only thing that's off the table is a bowling alley, because I found out they're like $100,000. But other than that, let's think
about... Do you have room for a bowling alley?
Of course you were pricing out a bowling alley.
Right.
Do you have room for a bowling alley?
Well, Alan, the previous owner, the seller, he's like, you have that big long driveway. You could just put the bowling alley there. Or
actually.
But be thinking about, don't think, woe is me, this is horrible.
Think about how much fun you can get out of it.
Think about the bright side. Okay, how can I...
make my life more fun.
Right. How can I benefit from this? How can I turn this fire into a benefit? So how it's going to happen, the end result of this, I guess it's kind of like I've always said in my life, everything always works out. But at the time, you don't think that. But then 6 months later, when it all worked out, I'm like, oh, you know, I wish I would have known that at the time. So I'm going into all of these things now knowing that everything's going to work out. So if you know that everything's going to work out, like if you could talk to the future, or future you could tell you, hey, everything's going to be cool, don't stress about it. So I'm not stressed about this stuff because I've been through it all before. I've been through worse. And, you know, I'm just trying to figure out how can I make this an opportunity? How can I benefit from this? I could eventually, like I was saying, the city and the county right now don't allow for ADUs, but 20 years from now, when housing is at a premium and there's a housing shortage of Prince George's County, they're going to allow for ADUs. I mean, they're going to follow like Montgomery County and DC already did. So eventually I'll be ready for that. You know what I mean? I'll have my little ADU all set up or whatever, because I'll have the super garage. So I could rebuild with a boring prefab steel garage that you park a car in and I rent it out for $60 a month. Or I could create this super garage that eventually might provide cash flow for me. At the very least, it's going to be an awesome place for me to hang out on the weekends when I think DC is played out. And maybe it could
be... and make that long trip from Columbia Heights to College Park.
Right.
That whole 15 minutes.
But now that trip will be worth it, yeah, because I'm going to my super garage. So, you know, it's perfect.
Awesome. All right, so we're a little past the 1 hour mark.
This is my favorite episode we've done.
Yeah, this is great.
This is just great.
This is great. We're gonna have Ron on for multiple future episodes because Ron is so entertaining.
This is my favorite episode. All right.
Anyways, listen for us in 2 weeks. I think, not sure who we're having on, but we have some ideas. Anyways, if you want to reach out to Ron, Jack, or myself, email us at info@dcrealestatepodcast.com.
Thanks for listening to the DC Real Estate Podcast. We hope you enjoyed the show. If you want to contact the hosts, reach out to them at info@dcrealestatepodcast.com. Don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review the show wherever you access your podcasts.